Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this Wednesday, June 26, 2024. I have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 4:30, we're going to welcome in our friend Anne, Ashley, and Brooke from the ODC. Looking forward to catching up with them. Right now, we have in studio with us Roland Hawk, Wood County Highway Commissioner and past president of the Wisconsin Highway Association. We're going to talk with Roland in a second. Our listeners may have noted that Lance Plimble is not with us. Lance is a little busy. He's not able to, but did set this interview up. We want to thank him and his staff for being able to do that, because Roland, I had not heard of you before, but last night I did a deep dive into your career and got very excited to talk with you, sir. One thing I do want to note real quick before I get into your backstory, I think that it's so vital that going forward, we as a society pay much, much more attention to our infrastructure. And any opportunity to talk about that, I appreciate, and you're giving us that avenue. But I also appreciate the work that you have put into our roads and into our infrastructure in your whole career. It's just amazing the work that you've done and some of the groundbreaking stuff that you've done. And no pun intended there. I did not realize what I was saying as I said that. But, you know, it really is some amazing work you've done. I want to get into some of that with you, Roland, if you don't mind. And let's start right there. Tell us a little bit about your backstory, your origin story, if you don't mind.
Sure. I'm originally from Western Pennsylvania. My father was a truck driver, had a trucking business, which got me interested in highways, roads, spent a lot of time traveling with him. When I graduated high school, my goal was to become an engineer. I spent a little time in the service, got an opportunity to come to Wisconsin and work for the Wisconsin DOT as an intern, co-op. Eventually, I graduated college, got a full-time job, spent 15 years with Wisconsin DOT, working both design, construction. Then I stepped out of the DOT and into private, did 8 years of consulting, worked with a couple of firms, some smaller firms, some larger firms. And then an opportunity came about to work with the Wood County Highway Department as the engineer. Spent 6 years in the engineering position, and then I've been the highway commissioner now for the last 6 years.
Well, in that experience, being kind of away from public service and in this, the private sector a little bit, coming back to working with the states and everything, what did you learn from that experience?
The experience working with private was fantastic. And what I tell people today is I couldn't do this job if I didn't have those experiences. I couldn't do it well. I'll put it to you that way. My career kind of took me through learning through the DOT's experience, you know, how to define the box, you know, what engineering parameters are. And once you start working for the private industry, their goal is to do things that are more efficient, you know, cost less, you know, find those things that they can get by without having to, you know, spend a lot of dollars making it work. So then I came back to the highway department, and the highway department is it's a smaller scale than DOT. We still got to follow a lot of specifications that are outlined by the feds and the state. But we also get to do a lot of things that, similar to the private industry, we're looking for ways to save money, cut down on, you know, on cost and time and things that just save the residents of Wood County more by being able to do things a little timelier, a little less expensive.
Yeah, you know, and especially in rural communities where you may not have the funds that you normally would in like a big city or some of that, and you certainly don't have the infrastructure to work with as well, those things become even more important decisions in where to, you know, you only got so much budget, you only have so much of the pie, where do we put this, where do we put that? I imagine that scheduling is also a big part of this, of when to do these things and the analytics that go behind that.
Absolutely. We have a... I call it a small budget when you compare it to large counties, but we do a lot of work for our municipalities, so towns and villages. And what we end up doing is we schedule a five-year plan. Projects are started design, you know, 3-4 years in advance. So when we get into the design, or I should say we get to the construction phase, we have windows where we can, you know, do work for municipalities. And that helps us because we've invested in, you know, equipment and trucks, an asphalt plant, you know, all kinds of equipment that, you know, we get to utilize for our local community, save them money as well. And that scheduling of those projects, we work around a very short window when you consider construction season, usually from about the middle of May to the middle of October. A lot of towns want to have their projects completed before school starts, so we're not delaying busing, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it gets challenging. We meet every week. My management team, we meet every week. We talk about every project that's on our list. And we do this with only like 40 people. Our highway department is 40 people. And we accomplish a lot in a short time period. And sometimes we run into issues that, you know, weather helps, you know, like recently the lot of rain we've had, it doesn't help, but we react to things as much as we can. And we try not to bite off more than what we can handle.
It's incredible when you think about that, and you give us a number like 40 people like that. That's just incredible that amount of people get such important and such great work done and accomplish as much as they do. That is really a credit and a tip of the hat to them and your team and everybody that works on this, and all the different things that go, all the different factors that work into that. And you mentioned the weather, and I've always been curious of how well you can. You certainly can't plan for it any more than any of us can as citizens and everything, but working around that when you do have delays, I always find interesting how you're able to work not only around that, but reschedule things and stay on point. It just speaks again to good people doing good work and sitting back and letting them do that in many ways.
Correct.
You recently were joined by the CBG, and you had the opportunity to visit Elwood County and talk a little bit about DBEs and the recycled asphalt that is going on with a lot of our roads nowadays. I think a lot of us, we certainly pay attention to orange cone season. We certainly pay attention. I can't go down that road because they're working on it. But as far as when that road is up and running, we're just driving over. We're not thinking too much about what's the materials that are made of. This is really interesting to me. When I was telling my mom and dad about it, they were blown up. They're like, really? This is fascinating. Can we talk a little bit about this process or what is going into these roads?
Sure. Wood County is very fortunate that we are one of, I think, 15 counties who have an asphalt plant, meaning that we get to produce our own asphalt. There's a private side that produces asphalt, and they do pretty much similar, same work as we do. However, when we start looking at our cost and expense of making asphalt, what we do today is we reclaim old pavements. We have our own crushing equipment, and we'll use that equipment to crush old asphalt and we recycle it. So 30% of the asphalt, that the new asphalt we're putting down today, consists of recycled asphalt. So the expense of asphalt today isn't necessarily the amount of aggregates that are going into it. They're obviously expensive, but it's the amount of oil. When I started working for the highway department, we were buying oil at about $350 a ton. And it's only 5% of what makes up an asphalt. So if you take a ton of asphalt, 5% of that mix is the oil. Today, it's closer to $700 a ton. So when we start utilizing recycled asphalts, we're not only getting to recycle aggregates, we're also recycling the oil that's in the old oil or the old pavements that we're reclaiming.
Wow. Which I can only imagine with what we were just talking about before, especially when you don't have a gigantic budget or anything. Every penny counts. That's got to help quite a bit.
It does. It does.
It's also unique, too, with repurposing, with recycling, something we've been talking about and doing since the early 80s, really, even before that, but really hit it home where every home was starting to do it and everything a little bit more going out of the late 80s and 90s. And here is another extension of that where our roads are using recycled materials and that, and saving our communities money along with really creating safe roads.
Correct. And it's also preserving resources. When you start thinking about the amount of aggregate that if you didn't recycle, our mines, our quarries, how much faster they'd be using up our resources.
It really interesting. How long has this been going on?
There's a number of counties that are just now getting into it. Wood County has been recycling asphalts for probably 15 years now.
Okay.
And it's saved us a lot of money.
I can imagine. Yeah. That's really good. I really appreciated the learning that. I think a lot of us didn't know that beforehand. It's insightful. It's interesting. We're speaking with Roland Hawk, Wood County Highway Commissioner and past president, Wisconsin County Highway Association, along with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media being here as well. I want to send a big shout out to them. Encourage you to go to YouTube, subscribe to their page, keep up to date with the great work that they are doing. Roland, I wanted to get into a little bit about our traffic. situations and how that can be this time of year for people. When we're talking closed roads and situations that we don't always run into in everyday life. You had a couple notes about this.
Yes. We try to notify the public well in advance of when projects are going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, people don't always get a chance to attend our meetings or see our Facebook or social media, whatever, to understand that. So some folks, the first time they know about a project, or at least they claim they know about a project, is when we start putting up signs and indicating the road is going to be closed. So we do everything we can to accommodate the local folks. Anybody who has a destination within a project, we do everything we can to make it accessible. However, what happens is, you know, we put up signs that say closed to through traffic or local traffic only. And people who don't have a destination within our construction project will often assume that because they live nearby, they're considered local traffic, so they can pass through the construction zone. It's not safe, for one thing, I mean, because our guys are out there trying to do their job, and, you know, we're still, you know, people are still passing through. And the thing I'd like to explain to people is that you see that yellow equipment, it's large, it's heavy, and the operator has a hard time seeing around them. And we've had a number of incidents where people will drive right up behind that equipment, expecting the operator to know he's there and let him through. And fortunately, we've not had any, you know, major accidents or incidents, but it's an inconvenience. A lot of times personal property becomes damaged because they're in a work zone. It's just not, you know, it's just not good business to have to stop and let people through. It slows down the process. So what we like to do is we like to provide a detour. Obviously, sometimes that detour is an inconvenience and people will take the shortest shortcut, or they'll try to skirt through the project. If we can, we'll let people through outside of our hours when we're operating. We'll pull the barricades to a soft closure so people can still get through. But a lot of times it's just not possible. And a lot of times we have to resort to notifying the sheriff's department or the local PD, and they'll come out and make a presence. And usually that will slow it down for a while, but without them being around, the habit continues to come back. So just like to have people understand that when we put up signs and road closures, if you can stay out of there until we're done, the project will go much faster. And you'll be back to the habit that you've been prior to the construction.
I think we can all agree that, that they can be a bit of a headache sometimes when it comes to it, you know, having to go a different route or anything like that. I would say, not speaking for anybody else, but I do believe a lot of people feel similar. A bigger inconvenience are potholes or not having good roads or not having good workers on those roads. And that's what we could lose if we don't do these things and follow the law quite bluntly. Yes. We need more people to be able to hear this, do these kind of things. It's important not only for these workers and their safety, for you and your safety, but also to get the job done. You know, everybody wants this construction done tomorrow. Everybody does, and including the workers themselves. They want to go on to future projects. They want to have other things on their plate. But it takes time.
It does.
And while infrastructure and roads, whatever it seems like to you, I promise you, there is a lot more detail that goes into that building that road or that infrastructure than we could ever imagine. People like Roland and that know much more about it than we ever will, probably. It's important to keep that in mind. When we're talking about this, we all use these roads. We all need these roads. You know, keeping an eye out, following the rules of the road is the least we can do.
Yeah. And what we're finding today is a lot of folks navigate with their phones. You know, they plug into a Maps app, and sometimes our construction projects don't show up on there to tell them that it's been detoured. We do have access now to an app that will notify the Google Maps program that we do have some projects. It helps when more folks are on that app, and it can, you know, it's a smart app, and it transfers that information as people pass through the area. But a lot of times people don't have the same app, and they'll end up in our work zone and they don't know where to go. All I ask is that if, you know, put your phone down, you see the owner signs, pay attention. There's generally going to be some indication of where that, you know, that detour is and how to get on it so you can stay out of the work zone.
We touch on this in our morning shows and some of our other shows whenever we have the opportunity. So I will take the springboard as you're setting it up there and piggyback off of that with it is orange cone season, and we encourage people to slow down, to keep an eye out for these workers. Even if you don't see a worker, doesn't mean that they're not busy or not doing something. You might not just be able to see them. Slow down. Keep an eye out on those roads. There is nowhere you're going that is worth a risk of hurting one of these individuals just trying to do their job. Just trying to work and really do right by us as a community and take care of our roads and do some good work for us, the whole community. It's the least we can do, again, letting them do their job as safe as possible.
Yes, thank you.
I heard you and Pam talking a little bit before our interview and our pregame a bit, and she noted that you were the reason we have this roundabout in front of our building here and everything. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yes. While I was working for Wisconsin DOT, an opportunity came about for me to go to some training. And I had been working with the engineering staff at the time here in the Wisconsin Rapids area on Highway 54 in the 17th intersection here. And it just so happened I was sitting in a class to learn about design of roundabouts. And this opportunity came up. I sketched it up, came back, talked to my supervisor. And there was some folks in the DOT at the time who weren't sure about it yet. Essentially what they said was, if you can get the city to agree to it, then yes, we'll move forward with it. So at the time, Mayor Virginsky was in office, and we went and met with him. He loved the idea, and his staff found out that it was going to be a lot less expensive to construct that or this intersection versus they had several alternatives that included additional lights and other things. And so then we passed the concept on to our design team, and the designers went ahead and designed what we have out here. So I like it. I think it flows very well, and it's reduced the number of crashes in this intersection.
And there's the key part. Like, there's any pushback or anything I ever hear about roundabouts, and I've been hearing it my whole life, a lot of my family's from in Naperville in Illinois, it's pretty much the home of roundabouts. Like, there is a roundabout next to a roundabout next to a roundabout. It just seems like there's a lot of them over there. But I've been hearing about this my whole life, and there are some people that, you know, they just use a roundabout. They don't really think much about it. And then there are, of course, people that bark about them. But I always come back to, with that, the safety issue, because no matter where there's a roundabout, that road beforehand and now with the roundabout is definitely safer. The numbers speak for themselves when it comes to this.
Absolutely.
Do you think that this is something, because I'm curious about this part too, when we're talking about roundabouts, something that is not a new invention, but newer in the industry, as far as, you know, new things come up every 20-30 years or what have you. We're using recycled materials for our roads. The evolution of this industry and the time that you've been in it, you've had to have seen some pretty interesting things that have come about. I just kind of wanted to touch on that before we let you go today.
A number of things. Not just the engineering concepts like a roundabout, but technology. When I started as an engineer, we were drafting by hand. You know, the computers were just, you know, simple commands and easy line alignments. And today, the technology is, it starts at the surveying. The gentleman or person who goes out and does the surveying has basically a 3D model generated when they go back and sit down, they plug into their software program, and then you can incorporate your design into that, and the program will help you develop three-dimensional plans. And now that we have that three-dimensional plan, we can download that into another program, and you can pass it on to the contractors or your construction folks, and their equipment using satellite technology can almost grade the road without them. You know, they need to be there to operate it, the technology is there to give them cuts and fills and stuff like that right on the machine.
It's fascinating. It's really interesting. I got to tell you, Roland, you're going to have to come back sometime because I got follow-up questions to that and other things. So really looking forward to talking again sometime. But thank you for the information today. I did want to wrap up a little bit, encouraging people to stop by your office, say hi, maybe ask questions that you might have, follow-up questions out there, you out there listening, or just curious about the industry in general. And be sure to ask Roland, if you stop by his office, about Ben, Big Ben the Bear. I wanted to get that story about Big Ben the Bear. I think we got a little time for it or anything. You've got a big stuffed bear, and I mean a big stuffed bear, in your office there. How did that happen?
It just so happened that I had a bear tag in 2007, and the neighbor that lives by me in Port Edwards has some property in the town of Sherry, offered to let me hunt, and I was just lucky enough to harvest this bear, and it was a very large bear. Had a local taxidermist do a full body mount on it. And I'm, as I mentioned, I'm originally from Pennsylvania. I'm a Steelers fan. And Ben Roethlisberger was a quarterback, and I still love Ben to this day. He was a great quarterback. Yeah. It just happened I nicknamed him Big Ben. And,
that's okay. There we go. Yeah. That's now I see the tie in there. Interestingly enough, this bear is about the size of Ben Roethlisberger. Yes. That is about the size of him. So they're very unique. That is a fitting name for this bear. That's awesome. Thank you for that story. Appreciate that. Really do appreciate the time, Roland. But most importantly, appreciate the work that you're putting into our infrastructure, into our roads and our safety and making sure our families, our friends, everybody is safe on those roads. We appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time. If people have follow-up questions, want to know more about some of what we talked about today, how can they reach you?
They can call our office, 715-421-8875. Currently, through our summer, we work a 4-10 schedule, so generally Monday through Thursday. Otherwise, after September, we're back in there 5 days a week, so you can reach us anytime.
Excellent. Again, thank you for the time, Roland.
You bet.
Want to send a big thank you to our friends at Wisconsin Rabbits Community Media as well. Be sure to go to YouTube, subscribe to their page, keep up to date with the great work that they are doing over there. We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.